man, the sports calendar really never seems to slow down. And I, for one, am certainly not complaining about that because I can't get enough, especially when it has to do with college football. And we just wrapped up the NFL draft weekend, and I believe there are a lot of storylines, not just about Shedeur Sanders, which I do have an opinion on and I'm going to get to, but I believe the NFL draft tells us a lot about the state of college football and where we currently are. So I'm definitely got to discuss that. Favorite moments from the NFL draft? I have quite a few, but I've narrowed it down to a couple, and I will share those tonight. Also, I have some more transfer portal news, as the spring portal window has officially closed, but there are still some names out there, some that have just committed. And by now, if you're a fan of a team, you more than likely know who's going to be on your team this upcoming fall season. With that, welcome into the Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game, across the Game Nashville Sports Network. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the Game Nashville. It's not just the Air Raid that you'll find over there, but you'll find all the great podcasts that me and my other coworkers have been working on. Lots of great content being pumped out on the regular. If you like wrestling, I believe they have wrestling over there. Shout out Connor Newt. And also, we got some soccer talk as well, Nashville SC. I'm not a soccer expert. I stick to college football because that's what I'm good at. So, of course, we have plenty of college football content coming your way. The episode that we just did with Chad Withrow from Outkick that was released last week, I've been getting a lot of great feedback, and that was certainly a lot of fun. Really appreciate Chad coming on. We'll have to get together again soon and make another episode, but without further ado, let's get into tonight's episode, because like I said, we just wrapped up the NFL draft, and I know most of you watched the first round because the first round is the main event. I was glued to the television the entire weekend. I watched day two, and I watched day three. I watched it all the way until the end because I can't get enough of the draft. But if you're anything like me, this is kind of where my head was at during the NFL draft, is you can really start to see the state of college football based on the results of the NFL draft. Parker, what do you mean by that? I'll tell you what I mean. Did you know that the SEC and the Big Ten combined had 150 out of the 257 draft picks throughout the three-day event this past weekend? By my calculations, now I don't claim to be a math expert, but that is just over 58% of the prospects that were drafted over the weekend were either from the SEC or the Big Ten. That is 150 out of the 257 picks. It gets even better, because on night one, which is the night pretty much everybody watches, it is like Christmas Day if you're a football fan. On night one, 26 of the 32 first-round draft picks were either from the SEC or the Big Ten. That is 81%. 81% of the first round was either from the SEC or the Big Ten. 14 of those 26 were from the SEC, which is almost half of the first round was from the SEC, and 11 were from the Big Ten. Players that were drafted that were not from the Big Ten, there was only six of them. Cam Ward from Miami went first overall to Tennessee. Travis Hunter went second overall. He's from Colorado. Ashton Jeanty, the lone representative of the group of five in the first round from Boise State, he was drafted sixth to the Jaguars. Teteroa McMillan, a.k.a. T-Mac, from Arizona. He is the second Big 12 representative on this very short list. He went eighth to the Panthers. Gray Zabel, holding it down for the FCS. North Dakota State, 18th to the Seahawks. And Omarion Hampton from North Carolina. The running back went 22nd to the Chargers, the second ACC member on the list. So, from a 50,000 point view, the SEC and the Big Ten dominated once again. And we've been talking about it on this show, and I'm sure if you're a college football fan in general, whatever podcast you may be listening to or show, whatever, the theme has been the dominance of the SEC in the Big Ten. Now, I'm not going to get into which conference I think is better because I just think that's ridiculous, because the SEC has been dominant for pretty much my whole life, but so has the Big Ten. In fact, the Big Ten has had the last two national champions in Ohio State and Michigan. This just goes to show that there really is no Power Four. Now, we like to refer to the Power Four as the SEC, the Big Ten, the Big 12, and the ACC. But in reality, we all know that it's the SEC and the Big Ten, in no particular order, Gap, Big 12, and the ACC. Now, you may call it the Power Four. Others may refer to that as the Power Four. But the SEC and the Big Ten are playing an entirely different sport than the rest of the conferences. And I hate it because I love college football. I love watching the Big 12. I love the ACC. I miss every single day. I miss the Pac-12. And hopefully one day if I'm elected college football commissioner, I will revive the Pac-12. But who knows? Who knows what is going to happen in the future? Oregon State and Washington State are trying to bring it back, but I'm getting a little sidetracked here. Anyways, the gap has never been bigger between the SEC and the Big Ten than it currently is. And if you want to zoom the microscope in just a little bit further, schools with the most players drafted. Ohio State led the way with 14. They were actually one player shy of the record that Georgia set back in 2022. Georgia had 15 players drafted, which I believe is the most in the common draft era. Ohio State had 14 this year, again, led the way. Georgia, of course, they're going to be on this list. They were second with 13. Texas was in third with 12 players drafted. Oregon was fourth with 10. And this is going to come to a little bit of, it's going to come across as a bit of a shocker. But Ole Miss had the fifth most players drafted this past weekend with 8. So Ohio State with 14, Georgia with 13, Texas with 12, Oregon with 10, Ole Miss with 8. What's the common denominator here? Each of those teams is either a Big Ten school or an SEC school. Now, you may be hearing me talk about this and think, well, Parker, duh. I mean, the SEC is going to benefit by adding Oklahoma and Texas, and the Big Ten is going to benefit by adding Oregon, USC, Washington, and UCLA. No argument from me, because you're right. I agree with you. And then some of you may be in the back room yelling, well, Parker, a lot of these guys weren't recruited by the SEC or the Big Ten. Yes, you're just making my point for me. Because, yeah, a lot of these prospects might not have been recruited out of high school by the SEC or the Big Ten, and they may go commit to a Coastal Carolina, an App State, a James Madison. But the truth is, if they're good enough, they will find a way to enter the portal, and they will transfer up. That is what the NIL and the transfer portal era has kind of caused. Because here's how I like to think about it. I think of it like this. Tulane, for example. Tulane has been a prestigious group of five school over the last couple of years in terms of football. But what happens to Tulane, it seems like almost every year, is there are good players that are on the roster transfer up into a quote-unquote Power Four school. Darian Mensah, their quarterback this past season, was a outstanding freshman. He transferred to Duke and is reported to make this upcoming season $4 million. Their running back, Makai Hughes, was another great player. He committed to Oregon in the winter transfer portal window. So if a group of five player really starts to shine, it probably won't be long, especially in this day and age of college football that we're in, before they decide to transfer up. And it's really unfortunate, because I'm trying to advocate for the group of five here, because if a coach does a good job of recruiting and developing, it only punishes them because those players will transfer up. And it's very unfortunate for a group of five schools, but those players find their way to transfer up. And like we saw this past weekend in the NFL draft, a lot of the elite players go to the SEC or the Big Ten. And it works out well for them, as, again, they had 26 of the 32 first-round draft picks and 150 of the 257 overall draft picks. The SEC and the Big Ten are not playing the same sport. And I've believed this from the beginning, but when NIL and the transfer portal were introduced, the lie that was kind of spread among the college football community is, don't worry, this will level the playing field. Well, I'm looking at the results of the draft. Does the playing field seem leveled at all to you? Because it doesn't to me. I don't know what your definition of leveled is, but it's certainly not what I've been looking at. NIL and the transfer portal. I think we all agree that we don't have an issue with the players getting paid. I don't have an issue with players wanting to leave and go to a different school and be able to transfer. I think it is totally in the player's right. But what I've been against from the beginning is the lack of guardrails, the lack of clear-cut rules that prohibit incidences like we've just seen with Nico Iamaliava and his brother Madden, and the transferring to 4 to 5 schools in a 4-year span. That is what I've been against. And NIL and the transfer portal have only made the rich richer, as the SEC and the Big Ten are continuing to level up. We've talked about in previous shows that the SEC and the Big Ten are actually going to take control of what the college football playoff will look like starting in 2026. So really, the SEC and the Big Ten are in fact playing chess. And I don't know what the future holds, because they hold the keys. So that's kind of what stuck out to me and really where my mind was at through the NFL draft, because it seemed like every player that I just saw getting picked off the board, Georgia, Bama, Ole Miss, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Oregon, and then every now and again you have a Miami sprinkled in there, you have a Colorado sprinkled in there, you have a North Carolina, a Clemson, but overall it was just the SEC and the Big Ten were dominant. Another storyline that I actually have not talked about on the show, but there are a group of people out there that believe that, you know, the stars that you get in recruiting, you know, when you're coming out of high school, you're 3-star, 4-star, 5-star. There are some people out there that believe that stars don't matter. I saw a tweet on Twitter over the weekend. It was by Chris Hummer, who is, I believe he's at CBS Sports. How the 2025 NFL draft first round picks ranked as high school recruits. This is according to 24/7 Sports. there were 11 5-stars that were drafted in the first round of the NFL draft. 15 4-stars were drafted in the first round. 4 3-stars and only 2 non-ranked prospects coming out of high school were drafted in the first round. And I want you to hear me when I say this. I don't know what you believe as far as recruiting. 11 5-stars that were drafted in the first round of the NFL draft, you may think to yourself, 11 out of 32, that's not good. That is great. 11 5-stars that were drafted in the first round of the NFL draft is outstanding, because what you got to consider is they're really, when you go and look at a recruiting website, whether it be like 24/7, On3, you go look at ESPN's rankings, whatever recruiting service, Rivals, whatever recruiting service that you like to look at, there aren't a whole lot of 5-star recruits. So if there were 11 5-stars drafted in this year's first round NFL draft, that's really good. And then right behind them, you have 15 4-stars that are drafted. And I've got the feedback that, well, Cam Ward, he was a 0-star recruit, and he was taken first overall. Yes, I'm aware. There are exceptions. You know, Justin Jefferson, he was a – I don't even think he was a – I think he was a 2-star. I'd have to double-check. I don't have that right in front of me. But Justin Jefferson is another popular example, because he wasn't a 3-star. He wasn't a 4-star. He wasn't a 5-star. Some, myself included, consider him the best receiver in the NFL. There are always going to be exceptions to the rules. Cam Ward just happening to be this year's exception to the rule. And it also didn't help that Cam Ward ran the triple option in high school, so he rarely ever threw the football. So it's kind of hard to get ranked as a pro-style quarterback, whatever, if you're not throwing the ball in high school. So I just wanted to throw that out there, that stars do matter. Recruiting rankings do matter. Are they everything? Not necessarily. But as far as predictive measures are concerned about predicting the success long-term that a certain prospect is going to have, stars are about as accurate as anything that we have data-wise. So don't buy into the philosophy that stars and recruiting rankings do not matter. There are always going to be exceptions. Always going to be exceptions to this rule. Are the exceptions going to outweigh the consistency? No. Because overall, I mean, just look at the statistics. 11 5-stars, 15 4-stars, 4 3-stars, and only 2 non-ranked prospects. The data speaks for itself. So I just wanted to get into that, because I saw that tweet kind of circulating over the weekend, and it was interesting, because stars do matter. So I saw somebody respond to that tweet that Chris Hummer put out, and said, I can't remember who it was, but they said that there were a lot of linemen that were drafted, and linemen are easy to rank. So yeah, that's totally the reason why. But speaking of which, I also had another person ask me the other day if I thought this was going to become a trend where future first rounds in the NFL draft are going to become so trench heavy, as there were 17 offensive and defensive linemen drafted in the first round this past year. My response was not necessarily, because the drafts vary from year to year. You know, last year it was a very quarterback heavy draft class, as there was 6 quarterbacks drafted in the first 15 selections. It was a very quarterback-heavy draft class. This year, it just happens to be the trenches, especially on the defensive line. Your edge rushers, your defensive tackles, tight ends were also another great position in this year's draft class, as well as running backs. So I just think it varies from year to year. But this year's abundance of riches happened to lie within the defensive line and your edge rushers and your defensive tackles. And also considering the team that just won the Super Bowl and the Philadelphia Eagles, one of the best ways to stop them, and that's kind of been the theme, just go ask Brandon Bean and the Buffalo Bills, what they tried to do with their draft philosophy this past year, the best way to stop a team like the Eagles is getting big on the defensive line, getting big in the trenches so you're able to stop that tush push, right? So now this was the story. This was the story, and I you probably know where I'm going with this. But before I do, let me get a quick sip of water because I need to make sure that I have enough voice to talk about what I'm going to talk about next. All right. This was the story of the weekend. If you watched ESPN's NFL draft coverage, you saw Mel Kiper getting a bit worked up. And he was getting worked up about a specific prospect with the last name Sanders. Shedeur, have you heard of him? Shedeur Sanders fell, I mean, just absolutely plummeted in this year's NFL draft. Many thought he was a first-round talent, myself included. Or if you didn't think he was a first-round talent, you at least thought he was a second-round talent. And apparently many teams and front offices didn't think he was a third- or fourth-round talent either because he was drafted in the fifth round by the Cleveland Browns. Now, there are a couple things that can be true with this situation. One, those who evaluated him and where they thought Shedeur Sanders would go were extremely inaccurate. And that's fine because unexpected things happen all the time in sports. None of us are prophets, although some would probably like to claim that they are. So that being the first thing. You know, your Field Yates, your Mel Kipers, they were just off, way off on where they thought Shedeur Sanders would go in this year's NFL draft. The second, I don't think that this is necessarily a talent issue because if it's strictly boiled down to talent, I'd have to agree with a lot of draft analysts. He's absolutely a first round, at least second round pick. But as the weekend kind of unfolded, we started to hear some things that Shedeur Sanders meeting with specific NFL teams, they didn't go well. The off-the-field interviews kind of rubbed some people the wrong way. And I've never met Shedeur Sanders, but if there was any dose of humility that Shedeur needed to have happen to him for the betterment of his football future, I'd say that this weekend certainly provided that. Now, there are a lot of people claiming that the league is racist, that there was collusion going on. Let me just stop you right there. I promise there was no collusion going on. The NFL is not racist, the league, I promise. Commissioners aren't out to get Shedeur Sanders. Here's what it boils down to. He was drafted. He was drafted way later than expected, but he was drafted. And now he has a chance to prove himself. Reese Davis put it perfectly, and I don't know if I could word it any better than he did. And I wanted to play the sound for you to hear how he put it. Here's Reese Davis on day three of the NFL draft after Shedeur Sanders was selected.
The key, Mel, it's not putting a value judgment on whether those who passed right or wrong. They did.
Yep.
So now, whenever you're in circumstances in life, whether you like them, whether you don't like them, whether they're fair or whether they're unfair, you might have to deal with them.
That's right.
And now Shedeur Sanders has to deal with
it.
And for whatever reason, whether he played a minute, microscopic percentage, zero percentage, or it's a legitimate criticism of the way he conducted himself during the draft process, this was the result.
Yeah.
Now he has an opportunity to answer it. I think yelling at the NFL about it is not
right. There's not a quarterback Boomer Esiason was not happy when he was the second round pick.
Tom Brady was not happy.
They dropped. How'd they turn out?
Nobody's arguing that can happen.
The NFL has been clueless for 50 years when it comes to evaluating quarterbacks.
All
that, no idea what they're doing in terms of evaluating quarterback. That's proof. There's proof of that. We know exactly what we're talking about with quarterbacks. They don't.
Okay, so that was Reese Davis on ESPN. He was sitting on the desk, I believe it was with Mel Kiper, Lewis Riddick, Field Yates, and somebody else, I'm forgetting the name. But basically, we all know that Mel Kiper erupted on, you know, he was in shock. We all were after Shedeur Sanders didn't get picked on day one. And then day two comes, and we're all expecting Shedeur to get drafted. Well, day two goes, and nothing. And by this point, Mel Kiper is fuming. And we all wanted to see what was going to happen on day three because we wanted to see where Shedeur Sanders was going to go. But a lot of us also wanted to see more of what Mel Kiper had to say because Mel Kiper, I mean, heels dug in, 10 toes deep. He was going to war for Shedeur Sanders. I got to say, like, I did. Part of me felt bad for him. Like, I really felt bad for Shedeur Sanders for having to wait so long to hear his name called because if you watched him play at Colorado, I mean, he didn't have a great supporting cast. He did have some good receivers, but one, you could expect a couple of things from Shedeur Sanders on a Saturday in Boulder, Colorado. One, they were going to air that thing out, and two, his jersey was going to be green because he was going to be on the ground a lot. Shedeur Sanders' offensive line was by no means good at Colorado the two seasons he was there. He was the most sacked quarterback in FBS over the last two seasons. Part of that, you could say, was his fault for taking some unnecessary sacks. But most of the time, it was just because his offensive line was putrid. So, I understand the situation for Shedeur Sanders was not ideal. He was certainly caught off guard, as well as his family, as well as those at his draft party. I get it. The situation was not ideal. But basically what Reese Davis was saying was, okay, but now he's drafted. Now he has an opportunity to prove that the teams that passed on him and the team in the the Cleveland Browns that passed on him four times. In fact, they took a quarterback in the third round in Dillon Gabriel before they drafted Shedeur Sanders in the fifth round, which I really think is interesting, but I'm not going to talk about that tonight. But basically, Shedeur Sanders has an opportunity to prove himself. We all, every single one of us, this isn't even just football related anymore. Things in life come up all the time that are not ideal. But you either have a choice to keep moving or to quit. And I don't think Shedeur Sanders is going to... I definitely don't see him being one to quit. He has an opportunity to prove himself. Going to Cleveland, I understand Cleveland's history has been awful when it comes to quarterbacks. But Shedeur Sanders is going to be in a loaded quarterback room with guys like Dillon Gabriel, who was drafted ahead of him. Kenny Pickett. Joe Flacco, Deshaun Watson, probably not going to play this year. But regardless of the situation, and I believe Deion actually prepared Shedeur Sanders for this, the situation is not ideal at all. But what are you going to do with it? Are you going to make chicken salad out of you know what? You're going to make lemonade out of lemons? He has an opportunity. And I really think that that's what it boils down to, more than all the hoopla. Like, yeah, I know everyone predicted him to go in the first or second round, but he fell to the fifth, and that's kind of the reality of the situation. Whatever it might have been, whether he rubbed general managers and owners and coaches the wrong way, or whether they saw something in his game and they didn't have him on their draft board, whatever. He was drafted. He has an opportunity to prove himself. I really think that's what it boils down to, guys. I really do. I wanted to get into some other kind of shocking surprises that came out of the NFL draft. So I want to start with Quinn Ewers, who was drafted in the seventh round of the Miami Dolphins. And I have engaged in this conversation a lot with friends of mine. There are a lot of people that think Quinn Ewers should have stayed in college because his draft stock wasn't as high as a guy like Cam Ward or a guy like Jackson Dart. And they thought that he could be making more money if he stayed another year in college rather than declaring for the NFL draft this year, which he decided to do. I want to present two different theories here. So there are a fair amount of college football fans out there who criticize kids for leaving to go to a different school in order to make more money. And then you have a guy like Quinn Ewers who decided to turn down, and the market for a quarterback this year was probably in the $4 million range. He easily could have made that. Now, Quinn Ewers isn't exactly going to be penny-pinching, even though he was a seventh-round pick, because after all, it is the NFL. He's going to be just fine with the paycheck. You have a guy like Quinn Ewers who turned down $4 million, give or take, to make significantly less on a rookie contract in the NFL. And there are people criticizing him for that, but he turned down the money. So I think to myself, which way is it? You criticize kids for going and chasing more money, and then you criticize a guy like Quinn Ewers for taking less money, but he goes to pursue a dream. You can't have it both ways. It's one or the other. And then also, here's something you got to consider. I watched Gruden's QB class with Quinn Ewers. That guy loves Texas. In fact, he has a Texas flag, I believe, and a Longhorn tattooed on his body. That guy loves Texas. Born and raised there. I understand he committed to Ohio State. But he ended up transferring to Texas back home. Could you ever consider the idea of legacy? I heard Josh Pate talking about this on CBS and 24/7 Sports. But could you ever consider the idea of legacy and what that Texas brand means, and the fact that that Quinn Ewers is a hometown kid, played his college football at Texas, and regardless of what the NFL may service Quinn Ewers, if he turns out to be a Hall of Famer, or if he just fizzles out and maybe becomes a career backup, or who knows, goes to the UFL, whatever. Quinn Ewers will always be recognized and known as a former Texas quarterback. Quinn Ewers wouldn't have had that same legacy if, let's say, he transferred to a Tennessee or he transferred to wherever, because we all thought it was probably, like, if Quinn Ewers decided to stay in college, it more than likely was not going to be at Texas because of the whole Arch Manning situation. But you got to consider the idea of legacy. If Quinn Ewers wants to be remembered as a Texas quarterback, then I think it was absolutely the right move to enter the NFL draft and allow the kid to chase a dream. I mean, it's his decision, and I support it. I support Quinn Ewers. So that's kind of my reaction to the whole Quinn Ewers debacle, if you will. There were also some other really surprising things that I saw in the NFL draft. Will Johnson, the corner from Michigan, is a guy that I watched throughout the past couple of years, and dude is a baller. He fell to pick 47 in the second round to the Arizona Cardinals. Now, I believe that had to do with his medical history, which concerned a lot of teams. He's had some lower body injuries as well as some chronic turf toe, and that type of injury doesn't ever really go away. So I'm sure the medical reports and teams do their research when it comes to this draft process, because I've talked to a lot of prospects. I talked to Bo Collins, the wide receiver at Notre Dame, and I asked him, I was like, hey, like, what's one of the craziest questions that you've been asked by an NFL general manager or owner or what have you? And he told me that one of the questions that caught him off guard the most was in regard to his medical history. And he told me that this specific team had his medical history dating all the way back to middle school. So these teams do, in fact, do their research. So I'm sure Will Johnson's medical history scared off a lot of teams, but that one still surprised me, because if we're going off talent alone, Will Johnson is probably a top 10 pick. But given the medical history, you have situations like this where he falls to the second round and Arizona was comfortable selecting him. So that's that. Xavier Watts, another really talented secondary player, a safety from Notre Dame, fell to the third round and picked 96 to the Falcons. Now, I didn't expect Xavier Watts to go in the first round. I didn't even expect him to go early second round. But I did not expect him to fall to the third round. So that pick certainly surprised me. Elik Ayomanner, wide receiver out of Stanford, was selected by the Tennessee Titans at pick 136. This one really surprised me because if you go back to 2 years ago, back when Stanford was in the Pac-12, and they played Colorado, just go, if you happen to be missing some CFB games and you want to go back and watch, go watch that game. Go see what Elik Ayomanner did to Travis Hunter, because it's probably not very PG-friendly stuff that I could talk about on this show. It was, I mean, he had his way with Travis Hunter. I'll leave it at that. I will leave it at that. So that one certainly surprised me. I expected him to be definitely a day two kind of guy. I didn't expect him to be a first round, but definitely a day two kind of guy. The Las Vegas Raiders, did you know that they selected two consecutive FCS quarterbacks in the sixth round? Tommy Mellott, a quarterback from Montana State at pick 213. Tommy Mellott's actually being converted to a receiver because he didn't necessarily throw the ball a lot at Montana State, but he's an exceptional runner. So they're testing him out at wide receiver, also probably be used on special teams. But two picks later, the Raiders selected Cam Miller, the quarterback out of North Dakota State at pick 215. I just thought this was kind of funny because you're taking two FCS quarterbacks, and I know one's being converted to wide receiver, but these two cats played against each other a lot in college. So I definitely thought that that was interesting. And last one, best one, Xavier Restrepo going undrafted, and not to mention the Titans picked him up as an undrafted free agent and paired him with Cam Ward. I don't know which one of you let this happen, but this was a mistake because there's a lot of mess and hoopla about the 4.87 40 that Xavier Restrepo ran, and I get it. That's not a great time for a wide receiver at all. But he's also Miami's all-time leader in receptions with 200, receiving yards with 2,844, and receiving touchdowns at 21. So he's Miami's all-time leading receiver. And this is the same school that has produced guys like Reggie Wayne and Michael Irvin, Andre Johnson, Santana Moss, and you let him go as an undrafted free agent. And not to mention, you pair him with Cam Ward, who was his teammate at Miami last season. Cam Ward has been advocating for the Titans to get Xavier Restrepo, and the rest of the league let it happen. I am very excited to pay close attention to see what happens because I definitely believe that Xavier Restrepo is going to make that 53-man roster. So that is, those were some shocking storylines that I, some shocking things that I did not expect to happen in the NFL draft this past weekend. So there are a lot of quotes that come out of draft weekend, and I'm not going to get to all of my favorites because there certainly were a lot, but one of my favorite quotes actually came from Jalen Milroe, who was picked in the third round by the Seattle Seahawks. Now, Jalen Milroe, regardless of what you think of his ability as an NFL quarterback, that's not what I'm here to discuss. I'm here to discuss what happened in off-the-field interviews with owners and teams. I'm just going to read this post that I saw on Instagram. Okay. So this is Jalen Milroe when he was asked what he could do get better at by teams and his response. One of the teams asked Jalen Milroe a series of questions about what he was really good at. Hondo continued. And then they asked him what he could get better at. And his answer was, how much time do you have? And the guy goes, we're sitting there interviewing Jalen Milroe, and he's telling us all the areas he's working on right now. To which the team said, Are you not concerned pointing out those things to us that would concern us? And he basically said to them, I wasn't in the room, but basically said, you should be concerned with any guy that comes in this room who hasn't played a down of NFL football and doesn't tell you that he has weaknesses or that he isn't working on them. Plus, it's an insult because that means he doesn't think you know how to watch film. So that was an anonymous source, anonymous team that was interviewing Jalen Milroe. And his response when asked about his weaknesses, how much time do you have? And he was not afraid to be vulnerable with these teams and share his weaknesses, but share how he was working on them to overcome them and make them potentially a strength when he gets to the NFL. If you could say one thing about Jalen Milroe, and I know this from watching him in Alabama and his time in Tuscaloosa, Jalen Milroe is a leader, but he is one of the most authentic and genuine people. And I think that is very clear in this interaction he had with a team in an off-field interview. Again, these interview processes are very tedious. I've talked with plenty of draft prospects, and just that to exercise that vulnerability and not let your weaknesses kind of bring you down, but instead be vulnerable with these teams. And again, it's like, hey, this is what I'm not good at. Here's how I'm working to fix it. And I like the part at the end where he was like, it's an insult because that means if he doesn't share his weaknesses, it insults the person who's interviewing him by basically telling them that they don't know how to watch film. So he's like, I'm not going to insult your intelligence because, I mean, you see these weaknesses, I see these weaknesses. If you draft me, we can work on them together and potentially make them a strength in the future. And I really like that interaction from Jalen Milroe. So that was probably out of the many great draft moments from this past weekend. That was certainly one of them. And I don't think that was talked about at all during the draft coverage, but I saw that as I was scrolling social media and definitely wanted to talk about that. All right. We did a lot of NFL talk. That's not going to usually be the case because this is a college football show. But I did want to end the show with some actual college football news. The transfer portal, the spring transfer portal window has officially closed. And there's some movement. There's some news that I'm going to share with you on tonight's show. So Micah Hudson, the five-star receiver that was originally committed to Texas Tech, he entered the transfer portal in the winter, committed to Texas A&M, hopped back in the spring portal window, and is now heading back to Lubbock and Texas Tech. And if you've been listening to this show for a while, you know that I'm very high on Texas Tech. They are my dark horse to win the Big 12 and potentially make the playoff. Well, they would make the playoff if they won the Big 12. So they are my dark horse playoff contender. And they just got Micah Hudson, a former five-star receiver. I think that was really big for Texas Tech to be able to keep him. Or not keep him, but bring him back to Lubbock. Brendan Sullivan, you may recognize that name as he was one of the quarterbacks at Iowa last year, got some play time along with several other quarterbacks. He has transferred to Tulane. Now, Tulane they weren't in a great situation because they had to find a quarterback after Darian Mensah transferred to Duke. They go out and they get TJ Finley, who's been around the block a time or two. He's been to Auburn, LSU, Western Kentucky, Texas State. TJ Finley was arrested. I'm blanking on the reason why, but that's not necessarily important. So TJ Finley is back in the transfer portal. So Tulane needs another quarterback. Brendan Sullivan transfers in, has Big Ten playing experience. So that could be good for Tulane potentially, depending on how quickly he is able to grasp the new offense. Jalen Rashada? Anybody recognize that name? Jalen Rashada, I mean, he's also been around the block quite a few times. Jalen Rashada was a really big name coming out of high school, but he entered the portal and he's actually going to Sacramento State. Sacramento State is going to be a FBS team this year, as they were an FCS team last year. They're deciding to test the FBS waters, and Jalen Rashada has committed to Sac State on a completely unrelated note to Sacramento State's football team. The basketball team actually hired Shaquille O'Neal to be their general manager. We talked about general managers in college athletics a couple of episodes ago, so I thought that was pretty cool. And lastly, Trevor Peña, the receiver that at Syracuse, I'm sure you've seen Fran Brown's comments circulating around this situation. Trevor Peña has committed to Penn State. Really big get for James Franklin and company. Penn State has had a chronic weakness with wide receiver. They return a very good chunk of last year's roster, but were very thin at wide receiver. And they go out and they get Trevor Peña from Syracuse, which is a phenomenal get. They also got Kyron Hudson from USC in the winter portal, as well as Devontae Ross from Troy. So, pretty good chance that Penn State has turned a weakness into a strength. So, I'm very excited to see what Penn State can do this year. There's a lot of high expectations for Penn State this coming season. Jam-packed show tonight. Jam-packed show. There is no offseason in college football, especially with the NFL draft, because it's basically connected. So plenty to discuss on this show. We're going to have another show for you soon. Make sure you subscribe to the Game Nashville podcast, where you will never miss an episode of The Air Raid with Parker Kelly. And if you haven't, please follow me on the socials at Instagram and Twitter, and you'll be able to get updates on the Air Raid there. So definitely appreciate you listening. Let's continue to get this thing rolling. Really appreciate all the listeners. Please subscribe. You'll never miss an episode. Have another episode here for you coming up within potentially on the weekend or maybe within the next week or so. But make sure to stay tuned in for that, and I'll talk to you soon.